From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Melissa Block. Mention the name Moby Grape to a room full of rock critics, and you'll hear nothing but praise. But aside from devoted fans and those critics, the group has pretty much faded into obscurity. Moby Grape formed in San Francisco in the 1960s. The reasons for the group's obscurity include bad advice, bad breaks, and bad behavior. But there are more reasons, and the band's sad story is still unfolding, as Paul Conley from member station KXJZ explains.
Moby Grape is the punchline from an old gag, "What's big, purple, and swims in the ocean?" But the band that influenced groups ranging from Led Zeppelin to the Pretenders was no joke. Neither was his 1967 debut.
It's one of the few rock and roll albums of any era that you can say, that is a perfect debut album.
David Frick is a senior editor at Rolling Stone magazine.
The songwriting on it is memorable. You take those songs with you wherever you go. The triple guitar orchestration, it's not just power chords. Everyone is playing melodies and counter melodies and rhythms. Very funky, also very country, very punk, very surf. And they were all singers.
Ain't no use in saying that I love you. Ain't no use in saying that I do. Ain't no use in saying that I love you. 'Cause you know and I know that it's true.
Guitarist Peter Lewis says the group's bassist, Bob Mosley, was a great singer.
Bob was the guy that could have been a star without the rest of us because of his voice. I mean, he could sing like Otis Redding. He looked like Paul McCartney, except he was blonde, and he played bass better than Paul. So, you know, he was the guy.
Come in the morning when the sun is shining. Bring me a dream when the sunbeams climbing. But my head, yeah, to light another day for me.
The members of Moby Grape labored over their sound. They became legendary for their 12-hour rehearsals. Drummer Don Stevenson.
We worked hard on getting the harmonies. We'd have rehearsals where all we would do is just sing. And then we'd come in and have rehearsals where we would play. And then we'd put it all together and then tear it apart and put it back together again.
8:05. I guess you're leaving soon. I can't go on.
Musicians would drop in to see the band, and soon, so did record company executives. Moby Grape found itself at the center of a bidding war. The musicians signed with Columbia Records, which proclaimed them San Francisco's Beatles and spared no expense on their first album. Again, Rolling Stone's David Frick.
Columbia really went to town, and yet they went to town at precisely the wrong time. That was an era when hype was suspect.
The label flooded the airwaves with Moby Grape, releasing 5 singles from the first album simultaneously. The result was that none of the songs made the top 40. Meanwhile, guitarist Jerry Miller says the musicians were unprepared for all of the attention.
What we had was 5 guys just going completely nuts looking for a leader. We couldn't even lead ourselves.
By the time they got to New York to work on their second album, the band was falling apart. And so was one of its guitarists, Skip Spence.
Skippy bumped into some people that turned him onto some hard drugs, to tell you the truth. That's when things started to unravel, because Skippy started to unravel.
In a drug-fueled episode, Spence attacked drummer Don Stevenson's hotel room door with an axe and ended up in the criminal ward of Bellevue Psychiatric Hospital. Bassist Bob Mosley also had emotional troubles. He quit the band in 1969 to join the Marines, but he was discharged for medical reasons. Mosley was later diagnosed with schizophrenia and wound up homeless. Peter Lewis remembers trying to persuade him to join a Moby Grape reunion.
We went to find Bob, and there he was, living in this cardboard box. He had these friends, the squirrels and the lizards, and I brought this guitar, it cost me $100, and I left that with him, and a tape of Moby Grape songs, and a tape recorder with batteries. So the next weekend I came back, and the cassette case, he had tried to tear all the tape out of it and left it, you know, down there in the bushes. And that's all I was left. Bob was gone.
Dawn to dawn.
medicine. People on their way, beginning a brand new day. I love hearing people say, it's a beautiful day today.
Today, Bob Moseley is recovering from his illness. Skip Spence never did. He died in 1999. But the band had other problems. For the past four decades, their former manager, Matthew Cates, claimed ownership of the Moby Grape name. Peter Lewis says the claim stems from an agreement drawn up by Cates and delivered by Skip Spence in 1966.
He said Matthew wants us to sign the rights of the name away because he needs him to book Moby Grape and then I have to ask each one of us. And so we thought, if Skip says it's okay, he's probably cool, right? And then we signed, and then, of course, everything changed.
Matthew Cates declined to be interviewed for this story. According to court documents, from the late 1960s through the early 90s, Cates sought temporary restraining orders to stop the members of Moby Grape from publicly performing under that name. So the band used pseudonyms. In 1989, they recorded as the Legendary Grape. Moby Grape's nearly 40-year legal battle included eight lawsuits, five appeals, complaints, cross-complaints, and stipulated settlements. Finally, in 2005, the musicians won back their rights to their name and started performing again as Moby Grape. This fall, they were poised to reach new audiences when the independent label Sundazed reissued the band's first five albums. But just as they came out, three of the CDs were yanked. Apparently, Matthew Cates issued a cease and desist letter claiming he owns the rights to the album artwork. Drummer Don Stevenson is now a salesman living in Canada.
Jerry gets up every day and plays guitar. Peter and Moseley play music. That's what they do for a living. These guys deserve to be able to take advantage of all the music they played, or at least be able to get credit for it and, you know, not have it pulled off the shelves. That's terrible.
For his part, guitarist Peter Lewis likens the fate of the band to that of the cursed crew of Moby Dick and their ill-fated captain.
That's the sad story of what happened to us. We trusted the wrong people. But who hasn't? You know, so let's not be a bunch of crybabies.
Don Stevenson says it's time to move on.
You know, you hold on real tight and you let go.
For NPR News, I'm Paul Conley.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.